Daddy handed over the biggest Howie on the shelf, a top stuffy that even sharpshooters couldn't earn without spending $8 or $9 on reloads. Mike thanked him and sat back down, looking overwhelmed. That damn stuffed dog was almost as big as he was. You try, Mom. No, that's okay, she said. But I thought she wanted to. It was something in her eyes as she measured the distance between the chump board and the targets. Please? He looked first at me, then at Lane. She's really good. She won the prone shooting tournament at Camp Perry before I was born and came in second twice. Camp Perry's in Ohio. Lane was already holding out one of the modified 22s. Step right up. Let's see your best Annie Oakley, Annie. She took the rifle and examined it in a way a few conies ever did. How many shots? 10 a clip, Fred said. If I'm going to do this, can I shoot 2 clips? As many as you want, ma'am. Today's your day. Mom used to also shoot skeet with my grandpa, Mike told them. Annie raised the 22 and squeezed off 10 shots with a pause of perhaps 2 seconds between each. She knocked over 2 moving ducks and 3 of the moving bunnies. The teensy ceramic chicks she ignored completely. A crack shot, Fred crowed. Any prize on the middle shelf, your pick. She smiled. 50% isn't anywhere near crack. My dad would have covered his face for shame. I'll just take the reload if that's okay. Fred took a paper cone from under the counter, a wee shoot in the talk, and put the small end into a hole on top of the gag rifle. There was a rattle as another 10 BBs rolled in. Are the sights on these trigged? She asked Fred. No, ma'am. All the games at Joyland are straight. But if I told you Pop Allen, the man who usually runs this shy, spent long hours sighting them in, I'd be a liar. Having worked on Pop's team, I knew that was disingenuous to say the least. Sighting the rifles was the last thing that Pop would do. The better the Rube shot, the more prizes Pop had to give away, and he had to buy his own prizes. All the shy bosses did. They were cheap goods, but not free goods. Shoots left and high, she said more to herself than to us. Then she raised the rifle, socked it into the hollow of her right shoulder, and triggered off 10 rounds. This time there was no discernible pause between the shots, and she didn't bother with ducks and bunnies. She aimed for the ceramic chicks and exploded 8 of them. As she put the gun back on the counter, Lane used his bandana to wipe a smudge of sweat and grime from the back of his neck. He spoke very softly as he did this chore. Jesus, Horatio Christ. Nobody gets 8 beeps. I only nicked the last one, and at this range I should have had them all. She wasn't boasting, just stating a fact. Mike said almost apologetically, Told you she was good. He curled a fist over his mouth and coughed into it. She was thinking about the Olympics, only then she dropped out of college. You really are Annie Oakley, Lane said, stuffing his bandana back into her rear pocket. Any prize, pretty lady. You pick. I already have my prize, she said. This has been a wonderful, wonderful day. I can never thank you guys enough. She turned in my direction. And this guy, who actually had to talk me into it because I'm a fool. She kissed the top of Mike's head. But now I better get my boy home. Where's Milo? We looked around and saw him halfway down Joyland Avenue, sitting in front of Horror House with his tail curled around his paws. Milo, come! Annie called. His ears pricked up, but he didn't come. He didn't even turn in her direction, just stared at the facade of Joyland's only dark ride. I could almost believe he was reading the drippy cobweb-festooned invitation. Come in if you dare. While Annie was looking at Milo, I stole a glance at Mike. Although he was all but done in from the excitements of the day, his expression was hard to mistake. It was satisfaction. I know it's crazy to think that he and his Jack Russell had worked this out in advance, but I did think it. I still do. Roll me down there, Mom, Mike said. He'll come with me. No need for that, Lane said. If you've got a leash, I'm happy to go get him. It's in the pocket on the back of Mike's wheelchair, Annie said. Probably not, Mike said. You can check, but I'm pretty sure I forgot it. Annie checked while I thought, in a pig's ass you did. Oh, Mike, Annie said reproachfully. Your dog, your responsibility. How many times have I told you? Sorry, Mom. To Fred and Lane, he said. Only we hardly ever use it because Milo always comes. Except when we need him to. Annie cupped her hands around her mouth. Milo, come on! Time to go home! Then in a much sweeter voice. Biscuit, Milo. Come get a biscuit. Her coaxing tone would have brought me on the run, probably with my tongue hanging out. But Milo didn't budge. Come on, Dev, Mike said as if I were also in on the plan but had missed my cue somehow. I grabbed the wheelchair's handles and rolled Mike down Joyland Avenue toward the funhouse. Annie followed. Fred and Lane stayed where they were, Lane leaning on the chump board among the laid-out popguns on their chains. He had removed his derby and was spinning it on one finger. When we got to the dog, Annie regarded him crossly. What's wrong with you, Milo? Milo thumped his tail at the sound of Annie's voice, but didn't look at her, nor did he move. He was on guard and intended to stay that way unless he was hauled away. Michael, please make your dog heal so we can go home. You need to get some Two things happened before she could finish. I'm not exactly sure of the sequence. I've gone over it often in the years since then, most often on nights when I can't sleep and I'm still not sure. I think the rumble came first, the sound of a ride car starting to roll along its track, but it might have been the padlock dropping. It's even possible that both things happened at the same time. The big American Master fell off the double doors below the horror house facade and lay on the boards, gleaming in the October sunshine. Fred Dean said later that the shackle must not have been pushed firmly into the locking mechanism, and the vibration of the moving car caused it to open all the way. This made perfect sense because the shackle was indeed open when I checked it. Still bullshit, though. I put that padlock on myself and remember the click as the shackle clicked into place. I even remember tugging on it to make sure it caught the way you do with a padlock. And all that begs a question Fred didn't even try to answer. With the horror house breakers switched off, how could that car have gotten rolling in the first place? As for what happened next? Here's how a trip through Horror House ended. On the far side of the torture chamber, just when you thought the ride was over and your guard was down, a screaming skeleton, nicknamed Hagar the Horrible by the Greenies, came flying at you, seemingly on a collision course with your car. When it pulled away, you saw a stone wall dead ahead. Painted there in fluorescent green was a rotting zombie in a gravestone with End of the Line printed on it. Of course, the stone wall split open just in time, but that final double punch was extremely effective. When the car emerged into the daylight, making a semicircle before going back in through another set of double doors and stopping, even grown men were often screaming their heads off. Those final shrieks, always accompanied by gales of "Oh shit, you got me" laughter, were Horror House's best advertisement. There were no screams that day. Of course not, because when the double doors banged open, the car that emerged was empty. It rolled through the semicircle, bumped lightly against the next set of double doors, and stopped. Okay, Mike said. It was a whisper so low that I barely heard it, and I'm sure Annie didn't. All her attention had been drawn to the car. The kid was smiling. What made it do that? Annie asked. I don't know, I said. Short circuit, maybe? Or some kind of power surge? Both of those explanations sounded good, as long as you didn't know about the breakers being off. I stood on my tiptoes and peered into the stalled car. The first thing I noticed was that the safety bar was up. If Eddie Parks or one of his greeny minions forgot to lower it, the bar was supposed to snap down automatically once the ride was in motion. It was a state-mandated safety feature. The bar being up on this one made a goofy kind of sense, though, since the only rides in the park that had power that morning were the ones that Lane and Fred had turned on for Mike. I spotted something beneath the semicircular seat, something as real as the roses Fred had given Annie, only not red. It was a blue Alice band. We headed back to the van. Milo, once more on his best behavior, padded along beside Mike's wheelchair. I'll be back as soon as I get them home, I told Fred. Put in some extra hours. He shook his head. You're 86 for today. Get to bed early and be here tomorrow at 6. Pack a couple of extra sandwiches, because we'll all be working late. Turns out that storm's moving a little faster than the weather forecast is expected. Annie looked alarmed. Should I pack some stuff and take Mike to town, do you think? I'd hate to when he's so tired, but... Check the radio this evening, Fred advised. If no issues, a coastal evacuation order, you'll hear it in plenty of time. But I don't think that'll happen. This is just going to be your basic cap of wind. I'm a little worried about the high rides, that's all. The thunderball, the shaker, and the spin. They'll be okay, Lane said. They stood up to Agnes last year, and that was a bona fide hurricane. Does this storm have a name? Mike asked. They're calling it Gilda, Lane said. But it's no hurricane, just a little old subtropical depression. Fred said, Winds are supposed to start picking up around midnight, and the heavy rain will start an hour or two later. Lane's probably right about the big rides, but it's still going to be a busy day. Have you got a slicker, Dev? Sure. You'll want to wear it. The weather forecast we heard on WKLM as we left the park eased Annie's mind. The winds generated by Gilda weren't expected to top 30 miles an hour, with occasionally higher gusts. There might be some beach erosion and minor flooding inland, but that was about it. The DJ called it great kite-flying weather, which made us all laugh. We had a history now, and that was nice. Mike was almost asleep by the time we arrived back at the big Victorian on Beach Row. I lifted him into his wheelchair. It wasn't much of a chore. I'd put on muscle in the last 4 months, and with those horrible braces off, he couldn't have weighed 70 pounds. Milo once more paced the chair as I rolled it up the ramp and into the house. Mike needed the toilet, but when his mother tried to take over the wheelchair handles, Mike asked if I'd do it instead. I rolled him into the bathroom, helped him to stand, and eased down his elastic-waisted pants while he held onto the grab bars. I hate it when she has to help me. I feel like a baby. Maybe, but he pissed with a healthy kid's vigor. Then as he leaned forward to push the flush handle, he staggered and almost took a header into the toilet bowl. I had to catch him. Thanks, Dev. I already washed my hair once today. That made me laugh, and Mike grinned. I wish we were going to have a hurricane. That'd be boss. He might not think so if it happened. I was remembering Hurricane Doria 2 years before. It hit New Hampshire and Maine, packing 90-mile-an-hour winds, knocking down trees all over Portsmouth, Kittery, Sanford, and the Berwicks. One big old pine just missed our house. Our basement was flooded, and the power had been out for 4 days. I wouldn't want stuff to fall down at the park, I guess. That's just about the best place in the world. That I've ever been, anyway. Good. Hold on, kid, let me pull your pants back up. Can't have you mooning your mother. That made him laugh again. Only the laughter turned to coughing. Annie took over when we came out, rolling him down the hall to the bedroom. Don't you sneak out on me, Devin, she called back over her shoulder. Since I had the afternoon off, I had no intention of sneaking out on her if she wanted me to stay a while. I strolled around the parlor, looking at things that were probably expensive but not terribly interesting. Not to a young man of 21, anyway. A huge picture window, almost wall to wall, saved what would otherwise have been a gloomy room, flooding it with light. The window looked out on the back patio, the boardwalk, and the ocean. I could see the first clouds feathering in from the southeast, but the sky overhead was still bright blue. I remember thinking that I'd made it to the big house after all, although I'd probably never have a chance to count all the bathrooms. I remember thinking about the Alice Band, and wondering if Lane would see it when he put the wayward car back under cover. What else was I thinking? That I'd seen a ghost after all, just not of a person. Annie came back. He wants to see you, but don't stay long. Okay. Third door on the right. I went down the hall, knocked lightly, and let myself in. Once you got past the grab bars, the oxygen tanks in the corner, and the leg braces standing at steely attention beside the bed, could have been any boy's room. There was no baseball glove and no skateboard propped against the wall, but there were posters of Mark Spitz and Miami Dolphins running back Larry Zonka. In the place of honor above the bed, the Beatles were crossing Abbey Road. There was a faint smell of liniment. Mike looked very small in the bed, all but lost under a green coverlet. Milo was curled up, nose to tail beside him, and Mike was stroking his fur absently. It was hard to believe that this was the same kid who had his hands raised triumphantly over his head at the apogee of the Carolina spin. He didn't look sad, though. He looked almost radiant.
Did you see her, Dev? Did you see her when she left?
I shook my head, smiling. I had been jealous of Tom, but not of Mike. Never of Mike. I wish my grandpa had been there. He would have seen her and heard what she said when she left. What did she say? Thanks. She meant both of us. And she told you to be careful.
Are you sure you didn't hear, even a little?
I shook my head again. No, not even a little.
But you know.
His face was too pale and tired, the face of a boy who was very sick, but his eyes were alive and healthy.
You know, don't you?
Yes. Thinking of the Alice Band.
Mike, do you know what happened to her?
Someone killed her. Very low. I don't suppose she told you. But there was no need to finish. He was shaking his head. You need to sleep, I said.
Yeah, I'll feel better after a nap. I always do.
His eyes closed and slowly opened again. The spin was the best. The hoister. It's like flying. Yes, I said. It is like that. Like being a kite. This time, when his eyes closed, they didn't reopen. I walked to the door as quietly as I could. As I put my hand on the knob, he said,
Be careful, Dev. It's not white.
I looked back. He was sleeping. I'm sure he was. Only Milo was watching me. I left, closing the door softly. Annie was in the kitchen.
I'm making coffee, but maybe you'd rather have a beer. I've got Blue Ribbon.
Coffee would be fine.
What do you think of the place?
I decided to tell the truth.
The furnishings are a little elderly for my taste, but I never went to interior decorating school.
Nor did I, she said. Never even finished college.
Join the club.
But you will. You'll get over the girl who dumped you, and you'll go back to school and you'll finish, and you'll march off into a brilliant future.
How do you know about
the girl?
One, you might as well be wearing a sandwich board.
Two, Mike knows. He told me. He's been my brilliant future. Once upon a time, I was going to major in anthropology. I was going to win a gold medal at the Olympics. I was going to see strange and fabulous places and be the Margaret Mead of my generation. I was going to write books and do my best to earn back my father's love.
Do you know who he is?
My landlady says he's a preacher.
Indeed he is.
Buddy Ross, the man in the white suit.
He also has a great head of white hair.
He looks like an older version of the man from Glad in the TV ads. Mega church, big radio presence, now TV. Offstage, he's an asshole with a few good points.
She poured two cups of coffee.
But that's pretty much true of all of us, isn't it?
I think so.
You sound like someone with regrets.
It wasn't the politest thing to say, but we were beyond that. I hope so, at least. She brought the coffee and sat down opposite me.
Like the song says, I've had a few. But Mike's a great kid, and give my father this. He's taking care of us financially so I could be with Mike full time. The way I look at it, checkbook love is better than no love at all.
I made a decision today. I think it happened when you were wearing that silly costume and doing that silly dance while I was watching Mike laugh.
Tell me.
I've decided to give my father what he wants, which is to be invited back into my son's life before it's too late. He said terrible things about how God caused Mike's MD to punish me for my supposed sins. But I've got to put that behind me. If I wait for an apology, I'll be waiting for a long time. Because in his heart, Dad still believes that's true.
I'm sorry.
She shrugged as if it were no matter. I was wrong about not letting Mike go to Joyland. And I've been wrong about holding onto my grudges and insisting on some sort of fucked up quid pro quo. My son isn't goods in a trading post.
Do you think 31's too old to grow up, Dev?
Ask me when I get there.
She laughed.
Touché.
Excuse me a minute.
She was gone for almost 5. I sat at the kitchen table, sipping my coffee. When she came back, she was holding her sweater in her right hand. Her stomach was tanned. Her bra was a pale blue, almost matching her faded jeans.
Mike's fast asleep, she said.
Would you like to go upstairs with me, Devin? Her bedroom was large but plain, as if even after all the months she had spent there, she'd never fully unpacked. She turned to me and linked her arms around my neck. Her eyes were very wide and very calm. A trace of a smile touched the corners of her mouth, making soft dimples. I bet you could do better if you had half a chance. Remember me saying that? Yes. Is that a bet I'd win? Her mouth was sweet and damp. I could taste her breath. She drew back and said, It can only be this once. You have to understand that. I didn't want to, but I did. Just as long as it's not, you know. She was really smiling now, almost laughing. I could see teeth as well as dimples. As long as it's not a thank you fuck, a mercy fuck, it's not, believe me. The last time I had a kid like you, I was a kid myself. She took my right hand and put it on the silky cup covering her left breast. I could feel the soft, steady beat of her heart. I must not have let go of all my daddy issues yet, because I feel delightfully wicked. We kissed again. Her hands dropped to my belt and unbuckled it. There was a soft rasp as my zipper went down, and then the side of her palm was sliding along the hard ridge beneath my shorts. I gasped. Dev? What? Have you ever done this before? Don't you dare lie to me. No. Was she an idiot, this girl of yours? I guess we both were. She smiled, slipped a cool hand inside my underwear, and gripped me. That sure hold, coupled with her gently moving thumb, made all of Wendy's efforts at boyfriend satisfaction seem very minor league. So you're a virgin? Guilty as charged. Good. It wasn't just the once, and that was lucky for me, because the first time lasted, I'm going to say, 8 seconds, maybe 9. I got inside, that much I did manage, but then everything spurted everywhere. I may have been more embarrassed once, the time I blew an ass trumpet while taking communion at Methodist youth camp, but I don't think so. Oh, God, I said and put a hand over my eyes. She laughed, but there was nothing mean about it. In a weird way, I'm flattered. Try to relax. I'm going downstairs for another check on Mike. I'd just as soon he didn't catch me in bed with Howie the Happy Hound. Very funny. I think if I'd blushed any harder, my skin would have caught fire. I think you'll be ready again when I come back. It's the nice thing about being 21, Dev. If you were 17, you'd probably be ready now. She came back with a couple of sodas in an ice bucket. But when she slipped out of her robe and stood there naked, Coke was the last thing I wanted. The second time was quite a bit better. I think I might have managed 4 minutes. Then she began to cry out softly and I was gone. But what a way to go. We drowsed, Annie with her head pillowed in the hollow of my shoulder. Okay? She asked. So okay, I can't believe it. I didn't see her smile, but I felt it. After all these years, this bedroom finally gets used for something besides sleeping. Doesn't your father ever stay here? Not for a long time, and I only started coming back because Mike loves it here. Sometimes I can face the fact that he's almost certainly going to die, but mostly I can't. I just turn away from it. I make deals with myself. If I don't take him to Joyland, he won't die. If I don't make up with my father so Dad can come and see him, he won't die. If we just stay here, he won't die. A couple of weeks ago, the first time I had to make him put on his coat to go down to the beach, I cried. He asked me what was wrong, and I told him it was my time of the month. He knows what that is. I remembered something Mike had said to her in the hospital parking lot. It doesn't have to be the last good time. But sooner or later, the last good time would come around. It does for all of us. She sat up, wrapping the sheet around her. Remember me saying that Mike turned out to be my future, my brilliant career? Yes. I can't think of another one. Anything beyond Michael is just blank. Who said that in America there are no second acts? I took her hand. Don't worry about Act Two until Act One is over. She slipped her hand free and caressed my face with it. You're young, but not entirely stupid.
It was nice of her to say, but I certainly felt stupid. About Wendy, for one thing. But that wasn't the only thing. I found my mind drifting to those damn pictures in Aaron's folder. Something about them. She lay back down. The sheet slipped away from her nipples, and I felt myself begin to stir again. Some things about being 21 were pretty great. The shooting gallery was fun. I forgot how good it is. Sometimes just to have that eye and hand thing going on. My father put a rifle in my hands for the first time when I was 6. Just a little single-shot 22. I loved it. Yeah? She was smiling. Yeah, it was our thing. The thing that worked. The only thing, as it turned out. She propped herself up on an elbow. He's been selling that hellfire and brimstone shit since he was a teenager, and it's not just about the money. He got a triple helping of Backroads Gospels from his own parents, and I have no doubt he believes every word of it. You know what, though? He's still a Southern man first and a preacher second. He's got a custom pickup truck that costs $50,000, but a pickup truck is still a pickup truck. He still eats biscuits and gravy at Shoney's. His idea of sophisticated humor is Minnie Pearl and Junior Samples. He loves songs about cheating and honky-tonking, and he loves his guns. I don't care for his brand of Jesus, and I have no interest in owning a pickup truck. But the guns? That, he passed on to his only daughter. I go bang bang, and feel better. Shitty legacy, huh? I said nothing. Only got out of bed and opened the Cokes. I gave one to her. He's probably got 50 guns at his full-time place in Savannah, most of them valuable antiques. And there's another half dozen in the safe here. I've got 2 rifles of my own at my place in Chicago, although I hadn't shot at a target for 2 years before today. If Mike dies... She held the Coke bottle to the middle of her forehead as if trying to soothe a headache. When Mike dies, the first thing I'm going to do is get rid of them all. They'd be too much temptation. Mike wouldn't want... No, of course not. I know that. But it's not all about him. If I could believe like my holy hat father that I was going to find Mike waiting outside the Golden Gates to show me in after I die, that would be one thing. But I don't. I tried my ass off to believe that when I was a little girl, and I couldn't. God in heaven lasted about 4 years longer than the Tooth Fairy. But in the end, I couldn't. I think there's just darkness. No thought, no memory, no love. Just darkness. Oblivion. That's why I find what's happening to him so hard to accept. Mike knows it's more than oblivion, I said. What? Why? Why do you think that? Because she was there. He saw her and he saw her go because she said thank you. And I know because I saw the Alice band and Tom saw her. Ask him, I said, but not today. She put her Coke aside and studied me. She was wearing the little smile that put dimples at the corners of her mouth. You've had seconds. I don't suppose you'd be interested in thirds. I put my Coke down beside the bed. As a matter of fact, she held out her arms. The first time was embarrassing. The second time was good. The third, man, the third time was a charm. I waited in the parlor while Annie dressed. When she came downstairs, she was back in her jeans and sweater. I thought of the blue bra just beneath the sweater. And damned if I didn't feel that stirring again. Are we good? She said. Yes, but I wish we could be even better. I wish that too. But this is as good as it's ever going to get. If you like me as much as I like you, you'll accept that. Can you? Yes. Good. How much longer will you and Mike be here? If the place doesn't blow away tonight, you mean? It won't. A week. Mike's got a round of specialists back in Chicago starting on the 17th, and I want to get settled before then. She drew in a deep breath and talked to his grandpa about a visit. There'll have to be some ground rules, no Jesus for one. Will I see you again before you leave? Yes. She put her arms around me and kissed me. Then she stepped away. But not like this. It would confuse things too much. I know you get that. I nodded. I got it. You better go now, Dev. And thank you. It was lovely. We saved the best ride for last, didn't we? That was true. Not a dark ride, but a bright one. I wish I could do more. For you. For Mike. So do I, she said. But that's not the world we live in. Come by tomorrow for supper if the storm's not too bad. Mike would love to see you. She looked beautiful, standing there barefooted in her faded jeans. I wanted to take her in my arms and lift her and carry her into some brilliant, untroubled future. Instead, I left her where she was. That's not the world we live in, she'd said. And how right she was. How right she was. About 100 yards down Beach Row, on the inland side of the Tulane, there was a little cluster of shops too tony to be called a strip mall. A gourmet grocery, a salon called Hair's Looking at You, a drugstore, a branch of the Southern Trust, and a restaurant called Mi Casa, where the Beach Row elite no doubt met to eat. I didn't give those shops so much as a glance when I drove back to Heavens Bay and Mrs. Shoplaws. If ever I needed proof that I didn't have the gift that Mike Ross and Rosie Gold shared, that was it. Go to bed early, Fred Dean had told me. And I did. I lay on my back with my hands behind my head, listening to the waves as I had all summer long, remembering the touch of her hands, the firmness of her breasts, the taste of her mouth. Mostly it was her eyes I thought about, and the fan of her hair on the pillow. I didn't love her the way I loved Wendy. That sort of love so strong and stupid only comes once. But I loved her. I did then, and I still do now. For her kindness, mostly, and her patience. Some young man somewhere may have had a better initiation into the mysteries of sex, but no young man ever had a sweeter one. Eventually, I slept. It was a banging shutter somewhere below that woke me. I picked my watch up from the night table and saw it was 1:15. I didn't think there was going to be any more sleep for me until that banging stopped, so I got dressed, started out the door, and then returned to the closet for my slicker. When I got downstairs, I paused. From the big bedroom down the hall from the parlor, I could hear Mrs. S. sawing wood in long, noisy strokes. No banging shutter was going to break her rest. It turned out I didn't need the slicker, at least not yet, because the rain hadn't started. The wind was strong, though. It had to be blowing 25 already. The low, steady thud of the surf had become a muted roar. I wondered if the weather boffins had underestimated Gilda, thought of Annie and Mike in the house down the beach, and felt a tickle of unease. I found the loose shutter and refastened it with the hook and eye. I let myself back in, went upstairs, undressed, and lay down again. This time, sleep wouldn't come. The shutter was quiet, but there was nothing I could do about the wind moaning around the eaves and rising to a low scream each time it gusted. Nor could I turn off my brain now that it was running again. It's not white, I thought. That meant nothing to me, but it wanted to mean something. It wanted to connect with something I'd seen at the park during our visit. There is a shadow over you, young man. That had been Rosie Gold on the day that I'd met her. I wondered how long she had worked at Joyland and where she had worked before. Was she Carney from Carney? And what did it matter? One of these children has the sight. I don't know which. I knew. Mike had seen Linda Gray and set her free. He had, as they say, shown her the door. The one she hadn't been able to find herself. Why else would she have thanked him? I closed my eyes and saw Fred at the shooting gallery, resplendent in his suit and magic top hat. I saw Lane holding out one of the .22s chained to the chump board. Annie. How many shots? Fred. 10 a clip, as many as you want. Today's your day. My eyes flew open as several things came crashing together in my mind. I sat up, listening to the wind and the agitated surf. Then I turned on the overhead light and got Aaron's folder out of my desk drawer. I laid the photographs on the floor again, my heart pounding. The pics were good, but the light wasn't. I dressed for the second time, shoved everything back into the folder, and made another trip downstairs. A lamp hung above the Scrabble table in the middle of the parlor, and I knew from the many evenings I'd gotten my ass kicked that the light it cast was plenty bright. There were sliding doors between the parlor and the hall leading to Mrs. S.'s quarters. I pulled them shut so the light wouldn't disturb her. Then I turned on the lamp, moved the Scrabble box to the top of the TV, and laid my photos out. I was too agitated to sit down.
I bent over the table instead, arranging and rearranging the photographs. I was about to do that for the third time when my hand froze. I saw it. I saw him. Not proof that would stand up in court, no, but enough for me. My knees came unhinged and I sat down after all. The phone I had used so many times to call my father, always noting down the time and duration on the guest call honor sheet when I was done, suddenly rang. Only in that windy early morning silence, it sounded more like a scream. I lunged at it and picked up the receiver before it could ring again.
Hello? It was all I could manage. My heart was pounding too hard for more. It's you, the voice on the other end said. He sounded both amused and pleasantly surprised. I was expecting your landlady. I had a story about a family emergency already. I tried to speak. Couldn't.
Devin? Teasing. Cheerful. Are you there?
Just a second. I held the phone in my chest, wondering. It's crazy how your mind can work when it's put under sudden stress. If he could hear my heart at his end of the line. On mine, I listened for Mrs. Shoplaw.
I heard her too, the muted sound of her continuing snores.
It was a good thing I'd closed the parlor doors and a better thing that there was no extension in her bedroom. I put the phone back to my ear and said, "What do you want? Why are you calling?" "I think you know, Devin. And if you didn't, it's too late now, isn't it? Are you psychic too?" It was stupid. But right then my brain and my mouth seemed to be running on separate tracks. "That's Rosie," he said. "Our Madame Fortuna." He actually laughed. He sounded relaxed, but I doubt if he was. Killers don't make phone calls in the middle of the night if they're relaxed, especially if they can't be sure of who's going to answer the phone. But he had a story, I thought. This guy's a Boy Scout. He's crazy, but he's always prepared. The tattoo, for instance, that's what takes your eye when you look at those photos. Not the face. Not the baseball cap. "I knew what you were up to," he said. "I knew even before the girl brought you that folder. The one with the pictures in it. Then today, with the pretty mommy and the crippled kid. Have you told them, Devin? Did they help you work it out?" "They don't know anything." The wind gusted. I could hear it at his end, too, as if he were outside. "I wonder if I can believe you."
"You can. You absolutely can." Looking down at the pictures, tattoo man with his hand on Lena Gray's ass, tattoo man helping her aim the rifle at the shooting gallery. Lane, "Let's see your best Annie Oakley, Annie." Fred, "A crack shot." Tattoo man in his fish-top cap and dark glasses and sandy blonde goatee. You could see the bird tattoo on his hand because the rawhide gloves had stayed in his back pocket until he and Linda Gray were in the horror house. Until he had her in the dark.
"I wonder," he said again. "You were in that big old house for a long time this afternoon, Devin. Were you talking about the pictures the cook girl brought? Or were you just fucking her? Maybe it was both. Mommy's a tasty piece, all right." "They don't know anything," I repeated. I was speaking low and fixing my gaze on the closed parlor doors. I kept expecting them to open and see Mrs. S. standing there in her nightgown, her face ghostly with cream. "Neither do I. Not that I could prove." "Probably not, but it would only be a matter of time. You can't unring the bell. Do you know that old saying?" "Sure, sure." I didn't, but at that moment I would have agreed with him if he had declared that Bobby Rydell, a yearly performer at Joyland, was president. "Here's what you're going to do. You're going to come to Joyland, and we'll talk this out face to face, man to man."
"Why would I do that? That'd be pretty crazy if you're who I..."
"Oh, you know who I am." He sounded impatient. "And I know that if you went to the police, they'd find out I came on board at Joyland only a month or so after Linda Gray was killed. Then they'd put me with the Wellman Show and the Southern Star Amusements. And there goes the ballgame.
So why don't I call them right now?
Do you know where I am?" Anger was creeping into his voice. "No. Venom. Do you know where I am right now, you nosy little son of a bitch?"
Joyland, probably an admin. Not at all. I'm at the shopping center on Beach Row, the one where the rich bitches go to buy their macrobiotics. Rich bitches like your girlfriend. A cold finger began to trace its course, its very slow course down the length of my spine from the nape of my neck to the crack of my ass. I said nothing. There's a payphone outside the drugstore. Not a booth, but that's okay because it isn't raining yet. Just windy. That's where I am. I can see your girlfriend's house from where I'm standing. There's a light on in the kitchen. Probably the one she leaves on all night. But the rest of the house is dark. I could hang up this phone and be there in 60 seconds. There's a burglar alarm. I didn't know if there was one or not. He laughed. This point, do you think I give a shit? It won't stop me from cutting her throat. But first I'll make her watch me do it to the little cripple. You won't rape her, though, I thought. You wouldn't even if there was time. I don't think you can. I came close to saying it, but didn't. As scared as I was, I knew that goading him right now would be a very bad idea. You were so nice to them today, I said stupidly. Flowers, prizes, the rides. Yeah, all the rube shit. Tell me about the car that came popping out of the funhouse, Shy. What was that about? I don't know. I think you do. Maybe we'll discuss it. At Joyland. I know you're Ford, Jonesy. It's got the flickery left headlight and the cute little pinwheel on the antenna. If you don't want me in that house cutting throats, you're going to get in it right now, and you're going to drive down Beach Road to Joyland. I shut up when I am talking to you. When you pass the shopping center, you'll see me standing by one of the park trucks. I'll give you 4 minutes to get here from the time I hang up the phone. If I don't see you, I'll kill the woman and the kid. You understand? I do you understand? Yes. I'll follow you to the park. Don't worry about the gate. It's already open. So you'll either kill me or them. I get to choose, is that it? Kill you? He sounded honestly surprised. I'm not going to kill you, Devin. That would only make my position worse. Nah, I'm going to do a fade. It won't be the first time and it probably won't be the last. What I want is to talk. I want to know how you got onto me. I could tell you that over the phone. He laughed. And spoil your chance to overpower me and be Howie the hero again. First the little girl, then Eddie Parks, and the pretty mommy and her crippled up brat for the exciting climax. How could you pass that up? He stopped laughing. 4 minutes. He hung up. I stared down at the glossy photos. I opened the drawer in the Scrabble table, took out one of the pads, and fumbled for the mechanical pencil Tina Ackerley always insisted on using to keep score. I wrote, Mrs. S., if you're reading this, something has happened to me. I know who killed Linda Gray. Others, too. I wrote his name in capital letters. Then I ran for the door. My Ford starter spun and sputtered and did not catch. Then it began to slow. All summer I'd been telling myself I had to get a new battery, and all summer I found other things to spend my money on. My father's voice. You're flooding it, Devin. I took my foot off the gas and sat there in the dark. Time seemed to be racing. Racing. Part of me wanted to run back inside and call the police. I couldn't call Annie because I didn't have her fucking phone number, and given her famous father it would be unlisted. Did he know that? Probably not, but he had the luck of the devil. As brazen as he was, the murdering son of a bitch should have been caught 3 or 4 times already, but he hadn't been, because he had the luck of the devil. She'll hear him breaking in and she'll shoot him. Only the guns were in the safe, she said so. Even if she got one, she'd probably find the bastard holding his straight razor to Mike's throat when she confronted him. I turned the key again, and with my foot off the accelerator and the carb full of gas, my Ford started up at once. I backed down the driveway and turned toward Joyland. The circular red neon of the spin and the blue neon swoops of the Thunderball stood out against the low, fast-running clouds. Those two rides were always lit on stormy nights, partly as a beacon for ships at sea, partly to warn away any low-flying small aircraft bound for the Parrish County Airport. Beach Row was deserted. Sheets of sand blew across it with every gust of wind, some of those gusts strong enough to shake my car. Dunelets were already starting to build up on the macadam. In my headlights, they looked like skeleton fingers. When I passed the shopping center, I saw a single figure standing in the middle of the parking lot next to one of the Joyland maintenance trucks. He raised a hand to me as I went past and gave a single solemn wave. The big Victorian on the beachside came next. There was a light on in the kitchen. I thought it was the fluorescent over the sink. I remembered Annie coming into the room with her sweater in her hand, her tan stomach, the bra almost the same color as her jeans. "Would you like to go upstairs with me, Devin?" Lights bloomed in my rearview mirror and pulled up close. He was using his brights and I couldn't see the vehicle behind them, but I didn't have to. I knew it was the maintenance truck, just as I knew he had been lying when he said he wasn't going to kill me. The note I'd left for Mrs. Shoplaw would still be there in the morning. She would read it, and the name I had written there. The question was how long it would take her to believe it. He was such a charmer, him with his rhyming patter, winning smile, and cocked derby lid. Why? All the women loved Lane Hardy. The gates were open, as promised. I drove through them and tried to park in front of the now-shuttered shooting gallery. He gave his horn a brief blip and flashed his lights. "Drive on." When I got to the spin, he flashed his lights again. I turned off my Ford, very aware that I might never start it again. The hoister's red neon cast a blood-colored light over the dashboard, the seats, my own skin. The truck's headlights went out. I heard the door open and shut, and I heard the wind blowing through the spin struts. Tonight that sound was a harpy's screech. There was a steady, almost syncopated rattling sound as well. The wheel was shaking on its tree-thick axle. The Gray Girl's Killer, and Dee Dee Mowbray's, and Claudine Sharp's, and Darlene Stamnacker's, walked to my car and tapped on the window with the barrel of a pistol. With the other hand, he made a beckoning gesture. I opened the door and got out. "You said you weren't going to kill me." It sounded as weak as my legs felt. Lane smiled his charming smile. "Well, we'll see which way the flow's going to go, won't we?" Tonight his derby was cocked to the left and pulled down tight so it wouldn't fly off. His hair let loose from its workday ponytail blew around his neck. The wind gusted and the spin gave an unhappy screech. The red glow of the neon flickered across his face as it shook. "Don't worry about the hoister," he said. "If it was solid, it might blow over, but the wind shoots right through the struts. You've got other things to worry about. Tell me about the funhouse car. That's what I really want to know. How did you do that? Was it some kind of remote gadget? I'm very interested in those things. They're the wave of the future, that's what I think."
"There was no gadget."
He didn't seem to hear me.
"Also, what was the point? Was it supposed to flush me out? If it was, you didn't need to bother. I was already flushed."
"She did it," I said. I didn't know if that was strictly true, but I had no intention of bringing Mike into the conversation.
"Linda Gray. Didn't you see her?"
The smile died.
"Is that the best you can manage? The old ghost in the funhouse story? You'll have to do a little better than that."
So he hadn't seen her any more than I had. But I think he knew there was something. I'll never know for sure, but I think that's why he offered to go after Milo. He hadn't wanted us anywhere near the horror house.
"Oh, she was there. I saw her headband. Remember me looking in? It was under the seat."
He lashed out so suddenly I didn't even have a chance to get my hand up. The barrel of the gun slammed across my forehead, opening a gash. I saw stars. Then blood poured into my eyes, and I saw only that. I staggered back against the rail beside the ramp leading to the spin and gripped it to keep me from falling down. I swiped at my face with the sleeve of my slicker.
"I don't know why you'd bother to try to spook me with a campfire story at this late date," he said, "and I don't appreciate it. You know about the headband because there was a picture of it in the folder your nosy college cunt girlfriend brought you."
He smiled. There was nothing charming about this one. It was all teeth.
"Don't kid a kidder, kiddo."
"But you didn't see the folder."
The answer to that one was a simple deduction, even with my head ringing.
Fred saw it, and told you, didn't he?
Yep, on Monday. We were having lunch together in his office. He said that you and the college cunt were playing Hardy Boys, although he didn't quite put it that way. He thought it was sort of cute. I didn't, because I'd seen you stripping off Eddie Park's gloves after he had his heart attack. That's when I knew you were playing Hardy Boys. That folder? Fred said the cunt had pages of notes. I knew it was only a matter of time before she put me with Wellman's and Southern Star.
I had an alarming picture of Lane Hardy riding the train to Annandale with a straight razor in his pocket. Aaron doesn't know anything.
Oh, relax. You think I'm gonna go after her? Apply some strain and use your brain, and take a little stroll while you do it. Up the ramp, champ. You and I are going for a ride. Up there, where the air is rare.
I started to ask him if he was crazy, but that would have been a sort of stupid question at this late date, wouldn't it?
What have you got to grin about, Jonesy?
Nothing, I said.
You don't really want to go up with the wind blowing like this, do you?
But the spin's engine was running. I hadn't been aware of it over the wind, the surf, and the eerie scream of the ride itself. But now that I was listening, I heard it. A steady rumble, almost a purr. Something fairly obvious came to me. He was probably planning to turn the gun on himself after he finished with me. Maybe you think that should have occurred to me sooner because crazy people have a way of doing that. You read about it in the paper all the time. Maybe you'd be right. But I was under a lot of stress.
Old Carolina's safe as houses, he said. I'd go up in her if the wind was blowing 60 instead of just 30. It blew at least that hard when Carla skimmed past the coast 2 years ago, and she was just fine.
How are you going to put it in gear if we're both in the car?
Get in and see.
Or,
he lifted the gun, or I can shoot you right here. I'm good with it either way.
I walked up the ramp, opened the door of the car currently sitting at the loading station, and started to climb in.
No, he said. You want to be on the outside. Better view. Stand aside, Clyde, and put your hands in your pockets.
Lane sidled past me, the gun leveled. More blood was trickling into my eyes and down my cheeks, but I didn't dare take a hand from my slicker pocket to wipe it off. I could see how white his finger was on the trigger of the pistol. He sat down on the inside of the car.
Now you.
I got in. I didn't see any choice.
And close the door. That's what it's there for.
You sound like Dr. Seuss, I said. He grinned.
Flattery will get you nowhere. Close the door, or I'll put a bullet in your knee. You think anyone will hear it over this wind? I don't.
I closed the door. When I looked at him again, he had the pistol in one hand and the square metal gadget in the other. It had a stubby antenna.
Told you I love these gadgets. This one's your basic garage door opener with a couple of small modifications. Sends a radio signal. Showed it to Mr. Easterbrook this spring. Told him it was the perfect thing for wheel maintenance when there wasn't a greenie or a gazoonie around to run the groundside controls. He said I couldn't use it because it hadn't been safety approved by the state commission. Cautious old son of a bitch. I was going to patent it. Too late now, I guess. Take it.
I took it. It was a garage door opener. A genie. My dad had one almost exactly like it.
See the button with the up arrow?
Yes.
Push it.
I put my thumb on the button, but didn't push it. The wind was strong down here, how much stronger up there where the air was rare. We're flying, Mike had shouted.
Push it, or take one in the knee, Jonesy.
I pushed the button. The spin's motor geared down at once, and our car began to rise.
Now throw it over the side.
What?
Throw it over the side, or you get one in the knee and you'll never two-step again. I'll give you a three count. One, two.
I threw his controller over the side. The wheel rose and rose into the windy night. To my right, I could see the waves pounding in, their crests marked by foam so white it looked phosphorescent. On the left, the land was dark and sleeping. Not a single set of headlights moved on Beach Row. The wind gusted. My blood-sticky hair flew back from my forehead in clumps. The car rocked. Lane threw himself forward, then back, making the car rock more. But the gun now pointed at my side never wavered. Red neon skimmed lines across the barrel. He shouted.
Not so much like a grandma ride tonight, is it, Jonesy?
It sure wasn't. Tonight, the staid old Carolina spin was terrifying. As we reached the top, a savage gust shook the wheel so hard I heard our car rattling on the steel supports that held it. Lane's Derby flew off into the night.
Shit! Well, there's always another one.
Lane, how are we going to get off? The question rose behind my lips, but I didn't ask. I was too afraid he'd tell me we weren't. That if the storm didn't blow the spin over and if the power didn't go out, we'd still be going around and around when Fred got here in the morning. Two dead men on Joyland's chump hoister, which made my next move rather obvious. Lane was smiling.
You want to try for the gun, don't you? I can see it in your eyes. Well, it's like Dirty Harry said in that movie. You have to ask yourself if you feel lucky.
We were going down. The car still rocking, but not quite so much. I decided I didn't feel lucky at all. How many have you killed, Lane?
None of your fucking business. And since I have the gun, I think I should get to ask the questions. How long have you known?
Quite a while, right?
At least since the college cunt showed you the pictures. You just held off so the cripple could get his day at the park.
Your mistake, Jonesy. A rube's mistake. I only figured it out tonight, I said.
Liar, liar, pants on fire.
We swept past the ramp and started up again. I thought, he's probably going to shoot me when the car's at the top. Then he'll either shoot himself or push me out, slide over and jump onto the ramp when the car comes back down. Take his chances on not breaking a leg or a collarbone. I was betting on the murder-suicide scenario, but not until his curiosity was satisfied. I said, call me stupid if you want, but don't call me a liar. I kept looking at the pictures and I kept seeing something in them, something familiar. But until tonight, I couldn't quite figure out what it was. It was the hat. You were wearing a fishtop baseball cap in the photos, not a derby. But it was tilted one way when you and the gray girl were at the Whirly Cubs, and the other when you were at the shooting gallery. I looked at the rest, the ones where the two of you were only in the background, and saw the same thing, back and forth, back and forth. You do it all the time. You don't even think about it.
That's all? A fucking tilted cap?
No. We were reaching the top for the second time, but I thought I was good for at least one more turn. He wanted to hear this. Then the rain started, a hard squall that turned on like a shower spigot. At least it'll wash the blood off my face, I thought. When I looked at him, I saw that wasn't all it was washing off. One day I saw you with your hat off and I thought your hair was showing the first strands of white. I was almost yelling to be heard over the wind and the rush of the rain. It was coming sideways, hitting us in the face. Yesterday I saw you wiping the back of your neck. I thought it was dirt, and then tonight after I got the thing about the cap, I started thinking about the fake bird tattoo. Aaron saw how the sweat made it run. I guess the cops missed that. I could see my car and the maintenance truck growing larger as the spin neared the bottom of its circle for the second time. Beyond them, something large, a wind-loosened swatch of canvas maybe, was blowing up Joyland Avenue. It wasn't dirt you were wiping off, it was dye. It was running like the tattoo ran, like it's running now. It's all over your neck. It wasn't strands of white hair I saw, it was strands of blonde. He wiped his neck and looked at the black smear on his palm. I almost went for him then, but he raised the gun, and all at once I was looking into a black eye. It was small, but terrible. I used to be blonde, he said, but under the black I'm mostly gray now. I've lived a stressful life, Jonesy. He smiled ruefully as though this were some sad joke we were both in on. We were going up again, and I had just a moment to think that the thing I had seen blowing up the midway, what I had taken for a big square of loose canvas, could have been a car with its headlights out. It was crazy to hope, but I hoped anyway. The rain slashed at us. My slicker rippled. Lane's hair flew like a ragged flag. I hoped I could keep him from pulling the trigger for at least one more spin. Maybe two. Possible, but not probable. Once I let myself think of you as Linda Gray's killer, and it wasn't easy, Lane. Not after the way you took me in and showed me the ropes. I could see past the hat and sunglasses and face hair.
I could see you. You weren't working here.
I was running a forklift in a warehouse in Florence.
He wrinkled his nose. Rube work. I hated it.
You were working in Florence. You met Linda Gray and